Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Monday, November 3rd, 2014, episode 10.25, the Week 9 Recap Show. Just when you think you got it all figured out in the NFL, the Dolphins wipe the floor with the Chargers, the Steelers roll the Ravens, and the Patriots drop the mile-high, high and mighty Denver Broncos. It was not a good weekend if you were a Manning, a Harbaugh, or Brandon Whedon. Just because, folks, I still have to finish packing as I get on a plane in less than 24 hours, this is going to be a short show, so let's chomp it in! Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right, another 13 games in the books. As I said earlier, this will be a short show. I've got to continue packing. I've got to go and do Sky Sports News TV in a little bit. And then I've got to wake up, go to work, jump on a plane, head to London, and get ready for Cowboys Jaguars in Week 10. The 12th and final game of the International Series for this year. Whew, man, it just seems like there is a lot going on. Anyways, I just finished watching the 40-24 pounding of the New York Giants at the hands of Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts back to their winning ways, looking unstoppable, putting 40 points up on New York in New York. Now, not a lot of news that I'm going to get to. I'll try and cover some of the injuries and stuff that happened as I talk about the 12 games. But for Derek Hanlon, who was talking a lot of smack, all I have to say to you, sir, is that I
am the smartest man alive!
That's right. So let's get to it. We'll just talk about the 13 games, and then we'll put me on a plane, and I will try and do a podcast from London. Just for you people, because I love you people. I love you people, and I do this for you. Let's get started with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. Well, the game actually started to be a pretty good estupendo game, but it quickly turned sour as the New England Patriots hosted the Denver Broncos. Denver got thrashed. Offensively, they had no answers. And the New England Patriots put up 43 points on that vaunted Denver defense that everybody was saying was what was going to lead this Broncos team to the Super Bowl. And after this, the Denver Broncos losing 43-21 at the hands of the evil empire in New England just goes to show you, as the Denver Broncos drop now their second game of the season, falling to 6-2, the New England Patriots improving to 7-2, leads you to believe what is going on with the season this year. Peyton Manning throws 438 yards. If I were to tell you that's how many yards passing he would have against New England, you would say, that's a Denver win. Well, nope. There were a couple interceptions, of course. One of those interceptions, I know everyone keeps saying, Manning threw two horrible picks. He threw one bad one. The other one, Wes Welker was right in his hands, but he took a vicious hit in the back, and he dropped it, bounced in the air, and then it was picked off. So that's the kind of interception that I've always said should not fall on the stat sheet for the quarterback, because that's all anybody sees. They see, well, you know, he threw two picks. Well, he threw one, and the other one, well, it was kind of given to the New England Patriots, because Wes Welker couldn't hold on to it. That being said, the offense just really was never in sync. It was early on, but in the second half, the Broncos had no answers. And on defense, they had no answers for Brady. Tom Brady throws for another four touchdown passes for 331 yards, and Rob Gronkowski all of a sudden is starting to look like the Gronk of old. 105 yards on 9 catches. He had a touchdown. Edelman had a touchdown. Brandon LaFell had a touchdown. And Shane Vereen also caught a touchdown pass out of the backfield. And it looked to me like at the end of that game, the New England Patriots and most importantly, Bill Belichick, the Emperor was trying to put 50 on Denver. I mean, he was making some really weird, questionable calls there at the end of the game when other teams would just kind of like kneel on it and, you know, let's call it a game. We got this in control. We're going to get out of here with a 43-21 victory. It wasn't good enough for Bill. He wanted to send a message. If we can put up 43, if we can put up 50, because I think he wanted a 50 burger on the Broncos. If we can put up 50 on Denver, wait till we get to you. Just wait till we get to you. That's what he wanted to say. Still with his stoic one-word answers, Manning. You know, Bill Belichick really took it to him. Tom Brady is playing at another level right now. I think he's finally starting to feel comfortable with the likes of Edelman, Amendola, Brandon LaFell, starting to really click with these guys. And, of course, like I said, Gronkowski has certainly stepped it up a notch. Another 100-yard game for him. I'm not sure what to make of this football game. Was it that it was just cold and windy and Peyton Manning was not in his game? I mean, even Manning said that he stunk, right? After the game, I stunk. And I was like, well, take a shower, please. But, you know, when he says that he had a bad game and he stunk, and you gotta believe it. You got to believe it. Emmanuel Sanders, another huge game, 10 catches for 151 yards. He's still bringing it. Demaryius Thomas also had 127 yards on 7 catches. The numbers just seem huge for the Denver Broncos not to have pulled a win, which leads you to ask this question, my friends. If the Broncos can be that prolific, have that many yards offensively, and still not get a W, what's going to happen in the playoffs? Because now the New England Patriots will have kind of the inside edge towards home field advantage in the AFC. Now, you know, the Patriots still have, you know, some pretty tough games, but so do the Broncos. They still got to play the Chargers again. They probably got to play the Chiefs. The Broncos have an easier schedule coming up for them. If you look at their schedule, it's not laced with a bunch of, you know, teams that it's like, you know, I don't know about that game. I mean, they got Oakland coming up. They got the Rams coming up. Miami, that should pose to be an interesting game. But, you know, they got Kansas City, Buffalo, San Diego again, Oakland again, and Cincinnati. Not a lot of teams there outside, I guess, of the Bengals and really the Dolphins who are playing good football. Not a lot of teams there to fear, so I think the Denver Broncos are going to be okay. They might finish 13-3, probably, you know, 12-4 at the absolute worst. They'll finish 12-4, but I'm looking at 13-3, probably even 14-2. I don't see them, you know, losing. I think they take this loss at New England pretty seriously. They come back. They're going to trounce Oakland next week. And you look at the schedule for the New England Patriots, and the Patriots are the ones that you kind of have to wonder. Yeah, they're doing really good. They're 7-2. Next up for the New England Patriots is they get a cushy bye, but then they come out of their bye week and they go to Indy. We saw what Indy just did to the Giants. They got the Lions. The Lions certainly get after the quarterback. Are they going to get after Tom Brady? They have to go to Green Bay. They have to go to San Diego. And then they finish with 3 division games in Miami, the Jets, and Buffalo. And you're like, dude, Steven, the Jets, remember the Jets were a blocked field goal in the last seconds of a game away from beating New England. Miami already beat them once this year. And even the Buffalo Bills usually play New England pretty tough. So that is a rougher road to hoe for the New England Patriots. But the way they've been playing lately, 43, 51, 27, 37, 43, that's a lot of points they've put on up over the last several weeks. So Tom Brady and Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots certainly saying, we are here, we are for reals, we're not going anywhere, and if Buffalo or Miami or anybody else wants the crown to this division, You better bring it. That's right. I said bring it, and bring it tough, because we're not just going to give it to you. They're 7-2. The Bills and the Dolphins right behind them, nipping at their heels at 5-3. So that division is certainly really tight. You can stick a fork in the New York Jets. Yes, mathematically, they're still alive. But you know what? For all intents and purposes, stick a fork in the Jets. They are done. Over. Capiche? Done. All right. Sorry, Jets fans. I didn't want to do that to you. But you brought that upon yourselves. All right, Jets fans, I'm very sorry. All right, we'll move on. Both Derek and I had the Denver Broncos in that game, and we just missed badly. Let's take a look at games of the week. The Arizona Cardinals traveled to Dallas to face the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys were without the services of Tony Romo at quarterback, and they trotted out Brandon Weeden. That's how I'm going to say his name. As a matter of fact, when I go and talk to him next time, when I'm in London, I'm going to say, could just go to him and say, Brandon Weeden, may I have a moment of your time? That's how I'm going to say his name from now on. Brandon Weeden, because that's how it was. It was high-pitched and squeaky and ugly. That's how bad the performance was. Not very good. Brandon Weeden. So that's all I can say about that game. I mean, it started pretty nice for Dallas. They picked off Palmer, rushed it in for took it in, pick six for a touchdown, jumped out to a 10-0 lead. It looked like maybe they might be able to pull one out without Tony Romo, but offensively after that, they couldn't do anything. Couldn't muster anything. They couldn't run the football because they were putting eight, sometimes nine guys in the box to stop DeMarco Murray. They were just simply daring the Cowboys and Brandon Weeden to throw the football. And he wouldn't. I mean, I think it took him like almost the majority of the second half, maybe even into the third quarter, before he completed a pass to a wide receiver. He wasn't even trying to go that way. He kept trying to force it to Dez Bryant, but throwing him awful passes. They weren't not catchable. So, yeah, Bryant wound up having like 11 targets, and he only caught two passes. And those two passes were late in the fourth quarter, one of them for a touchdown. But they meant nothing. They were in garbage time. It didn't mean anything. When it mattered, when they needed something, Weeden was just bad. He had a couple really bad throws that were intercepted. And that kind of stopped the Cowboys. Now, you're going to have to tip your hat to the Arizona Cardinals. Best record in the league. The Cardinals looked fantastic defensively. You know, offensively, they did enough to win the game. You know, they got short fields from their defense, and when they got short fields, they capitalized. So, you know, the Arizona Cardinals are – I want to see the Arizona Cardinals playing the Dallas Cowboys at full strength. And, you know, for Patrick Peterson at the end of that game to say, it's not my fault that Tony Romo's not on the field. Yeah, it isn't. But you know what? It's a valid question when a reporter says, do you think it would have been different had Tony Romo been out there? We don't know. We'll wait and see. And hopefully that's a game that I'd like to see maybe later on in the playoffs. Arizona Cardinals get the win 28-17 in Dallas, boast the best record in the National Football League. They are sitting there at 7-1 with a full three-game lead over San Francisco and a full two-game lead over the Seattle Seahawks. Just looking pretty good. They're on a four-game win streak. They're 4-1 in their last five games. That lone loss coming to the Denver Broncos. They have net points of 36, best in that NFC West division. So the Arizona Cardinals now have got to be taken for real. For the Arizona Cardinals, I have to say, I am sorry. Please forgive me. I want you to forgive me because I made a mistake. I said that you guys at 3-1 were not going to make the playoffs, that you guys were not that good. And usually at 3-1, you guys would bow down and be out of there. But you're now 7-1. You look at the schedule for the Arizona Cardinals coming up. And it's a little tough, but, you know, you have to believe that they are what they are. I say everyone at this stage of the season has now played 8 games or more. Some teams have played 9, but most have played 8. A lot of buys have been played already, have been taken already. So with those bye weeks into account, at week 9, every team has at least played half their schedule, has played 8 games. And if you look at the 8 games that the Arizona Cardinals have played, they're 7-1. As I said, their lone loss coming to the Denver Broncos, it was a 41-20 loss in Denver, mind you. It was pretty tough. And that was one of, like, Manning's crazy days where he almost passed for 500 yards in that game. Yeah, that was a tough loss. But everyone else, they've handled quite nicely. They've taken care of business when playing the NFC East. That was the NFC division that they had to play. They handed the Giants a 25-14 loss. They handled Washington 30-20. They beat Philadelphia 24-20. And now, just having beaten Dallas 28-17, they gotten past the East with 4-0. And they handed the San Diego Chargers their first loss week 1. And they've already beaten the San Francisco 49ers once. So you look at the rest of the schedule. They got the Rams that they got to play twice. They still got to play San Francisco again. They got to play Seattle twice. Those are going to be good games. But the rest of the games are against Atlanta, a team that's not doing very good. Against Kansas City, they'll be all right there. They got Detroit. That's going to be tough because they'll probably get after Carson Palmer. We'll see how it is. But fortunately, that game is at the University of Phoenix Stadium. So I have to tip my hat off to the Arizona Cardinals. Say congratulations on your big win in Dallas. And say congratulations with the best record in the league at 7-1. You're looking really good. And for me, earlier in the season, after week 4, when you guys were 3-1, and I said there's no way that you guys continue that pace, well, you've certainly proven me wrong. And now everyone's going to have to take the Arizona Cardinals seriously, especially after the impressive back-to-back wins over the Eagles and the Cowboys. So the final score there, the Arizona Cardinals 28-17. Both Derek and I had Dallas not looking very good for us as we start at 0-2. Then we go to 0-3 as we both had the San Diego Chargers traveling to Miami to face the Miami Dolphins. And what can I say? No. You don't get that song. You were horrible, San Diego Chargers. They were awful. A 37-0 beatdown at the hand of Ryan Tannehill and the Miami Dolphins in Miami. That game was just not good for the San Diego Chargers. They looked awful. They looked really bad. And as a matter of fact, at the end of that game, it was so bad that the Miami Dolphins even put Gatorade on the official. If you haven't seen that, try to go out to NFL.com. Take a look at the official getting there. The Dolphins were trying to put a bucket of ice water on Philbin, the head coach, and the official was standing right next to him. Not only did they get Philbin, they got the official too, and the official turns around like, well, why am I getting a water bucket? Anyways, besides that, the San Diego Chargers, this is what head coach Mike McCoy had to say after that game. It was really bad, but here's Mike McCoy talking to the media after the 37-0 beatdown.
We were out-coached, out-played. It all starts with me as the head coach. We got to do a better job in all areas. And so, you know, to what was at stake and with the break we had and what was, you know, going into an opportunity to win a football game on the road against a good opponent. From the very first series on offensively, penalties, not converting on 4th-and-1 with a great opportunity there, run through on the backside, didn't block it. So it's just a number of things went wrong from the very first series on, and then we couldn't stop them. So poor coaching on my part to start with.
Yeah, you know what my problem is with that, coach? I'm tired of head coaches coming out after the game is over and telling the media that it was their fault. that the reason their team got whooped 37-0 was because they didn't prepare their team well enough. They were not prepared. They were outcoached. Really? Seriously? That's the card that he is going to play after a 37-0 shellacking. Like, he is the one responsible for Phillip Rivers throwing three interceptions. He is the one responsible for Phillip Rivers only completing 12 of 23 for 138 yards, no touchdowns, and throwing three picks. Oh, and by the way, he lost a fumble too. Four turnovers. That is what the coach wants us to believe, that he so didn't prepare his players well enough that his quarterback lost the ball four times, and that was his fault. I'm sorry, coach. Sometimes you just play a stinker of a game, and you get beat down. And it has nothing to do with you being outcoached. You were just beat down. Rivers had a horrible game. And trust you, he hasn't had that many bad games this year. He's had some pretty good games. He's actually been really good throwing the football. You just got outperformed. Tannehill, 288 yards passing for three touchdowns. He had no interceptions. They didn't lose any fumbles. I think Tannehill fumbled the ball, but they recovered. Miami recovered their own fumble. They didn't turn the ball over, and you did. And, you know, when you have four turnovers and they have none and they take advantage of those turnovers, yeah, you're not going to win games. It has nothing to do with you being outcoached. Don't try to, you know, divert the attention of some really bad play. There were some really bad performances out there. Phillip Rivers is human just like everybody else. He's going to have a bad day every once in a while, and he had one. It was a stinker. I think the San Diego Chargers will bounce back. They're 5-4. I don't think they're in contention for the division, although I think the New England Patriots did them a favor by beating the Broncos. But they're in position to fight for a wild card spot, and they're just going to have to string together some wins. Going to be very interesting to see how they finish out the season, because if you look at the San Diego Chargers and their schedule, and what they're about, and, you know, they're sitting at 5-4, and then here comes, after this horrible, horrible loss, they now have to stew on it for 2 weeks because they don't get on the field this week. They have a bye coming up in week 10. So not only do they have to have all this week to stew about it, then they have a whole nother week after that to get ready for the Oakland Raiders. But fortunately for them, you know, it does get a little bit easier. They got Oakland, which they've already defeated once this year. And they can defeat Oakland again, because this time it's in San Diego. Then they host the Rams in San Diego. They travel to Baltimore. They host New England. They host Denver. And then they end on the road at San Francisco and at Kansas City. They're going to have to probably win 6 out of those remaining games. It may be a little too tough to ask. If we give them, based on records, if we give them the Raider and Ram game, they still need to come up with 4 wins at Baltimore, against New England, Denver, at San Francisco, and at Kansas City. So we're giving them 2 wins. They still need to come up with 4 out of the last 5, which is at Baltimore, against New England, against Denver, at San Francisco, at Kansas City. They could probably go take the Niners. They could probably go take the Chiefs. That means they got to win 2. I'm breaking it down. 2 between at Baltimore and then hosting New England and Denver. They got to win 2 out of those 3. Whew, man, they dug a hole. Once again, the San Diego Chargers managed to dig a hole that they have to try and get out of. That may be just a little too much to ask. So anyways, the final 37-0, the Miami Dolphins, they improve to 5-3. As I said, they're a game and a half out of first place, just right there, just nipping at the heels of the Patriots, right there with the Buffalo Bills. The advantage for them is that they've already defeated the Patriots once, so they can get them again. The thing is, they're going to have to beat Buffalo when they play Buffalo in Miami and avenge that week two loss at the hands of the Bills. All right. As I said, both Derek and I had San Diego. Not good. Finally, another game of the week, and this was the challenge game. The New Orleans Saints traveled to Carolina. And as I told Derek before,
I am the smartest man alive.
I told Derek, don't trust Carolina. Their offense is weak. They don't look really good. Yes, New Orleans is on the road, but their offense is clicking. They're going to do better than the Panthers. And that's really what happened. I mean, the Panthers, they had nothing offensively. And I don't want to beat a dead horse. Here's the thing. Cam Newton cannot do it himself. Dude didn't even complete 50% of his passes. He completed 10 passes out of 28 attempts. 10 out of 28 for 151 yards, no TDs. He had a pick. He did score the lone touchdown for the Panthers, but once again had 7 rush attempts for 43 yards. Just 3 shy of the leading rusher, Jonathan Stewart, there with who had 46 yards. Too much to ask of Cam Newton. They haven't provided him with enough offensive weapons ever since Steve Smith Sr. was cast off, went over to Baltimore, and that guy is still balling, mind you, balling his mind off in Baltimore. They got no one. Relying on a tight end, Greg Olsen, and a rookie, Kelvin Benjamin, and they're just not getting it done. They're not getting it done, and Ron Rivera, he's looking a little lost, and he may be in danger. I don't want to put him on the hot seat just yet. I like Riverboat Gambling Ron, but he may have to be put on the hot seat. It's just something that may be happening here. The final there on Thursday Night Football, New Orleans 28, Carolina 10. Drew Brees got back to his slinging ways, 297 yards passing. Mark Ingram got 100 yards on the ground. Jimmy Graham making a comeback, shoulder starting to feel a little bit better. 7 catches for 83 yards and the touchdowns looking really good. And if that offense starts clicking and the defense plays as tough as they did there against the Carolina Panthers, watch out for the New Orleans Saints. They're 4-4. They're back to 500, and they now lead the division, a division that is pretty weak, that has Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Carolina Panthers all in it. New Orleans may be just okay and ready to win that division. One more time, just for Derek, because I like to rub it in.
I am the smartest man alive!
That now brings the season series to, I have 5 wins. The fans have 4 wins. So 5-4, maybe time where I just got to start distancing. I got to get like 3 or 4 wins in a row. Let's see if I can get another 3-game win streak like before. All right, the next game of the week. The Baltimore Ravens traveled to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. Both Derek and I had the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we were right on the money here. Ben Roethlisberger. What can you say about this cat? Another week, another 6 touchdown pass performance. That's 12 touchdown passes in the last 2 weeks. That's a record, folks. That's a record set by, are you ready for this? Back in 1963 by Tom Flores. That's right. He had 11 touchdowns in the span of 2 weeks. Also in 2007, Tom Brady of the Patriots had 11 touchdowns in 2 weeks. That was broken as Ben Roethlisberger tossed 6 last week, 6 this week, 12 TD passes over the span of 2 games. the most in the history of the NFL. That's just pretty impressive. I mean, he didn't throw for anywhere near the yardage that he did last week, but he still threw for 303 yards. Over the last 2 weeks, he's thrown something crazy like 850-plus yards and 12 touchdowns. Are you kidding me? I think he had 340 yards this week and, like, I don't know, 522 the week before, right? So 522, 340, that's 862. Oh, my gosh. 862 yards passing and 12 touchdowns in 2 weeks. Some guys do that over the course of maybe 10 weeks. He's done it in two. Like I said, not good to be a Harbaugh this week. The Baltimore Ravens had no answer. No answer. And it's not like Roethlisberger was just going to one guy. I mean, he spread the ball around. I think he hit something like 8 different receivers. Antonio Brown had a touchdown. Marcus Wheaton, the rookie, had a touchdown. Martavius Bryant, the other rookie, had 2 touchdown passes caught. Le'Veon Bell caught one out of the backfield. And the tight end, Mark Spaeth, caught a 33-yard bomb for a touchdown. He was slipping and falling, just sneaked into the end zone there. They were all just pretty impressive. I think the touchdown passes were something like 33 yards, 54 yards, 47 yards. I mean, they weren't just little 2-3-yard passes for touchdowns. They were big, big gains. And the Baltimore Ravens looked lost. Even when they took a lead, they started with a nice lead early in the game. Then they got into a little rut. There was an interception. There was a couple of fumbles. And that's all the Steelers needed. The other thing is, when in the world did James Harrison sign back up with the Pittsburgh Steelers? That guy was all over the place in this game. Welcome back, Mr. Guns, James Harrison. He looked pretty impressive. He looked like he found the fountain of youth. He was chasing Joe Flacco around all over the place. He got smacked around. 43-23. The Pittsburgh Steelers, all of a sudden, you know, with their win, they're kind of like making the AFC North kind of like the best division in the league. Do you realize that right now there is not a single team in the AFC North with a losing record? Heck, there's not a single team with a 500 record. They all have winning records. Baltimore has the worst record in that division at 5-4. Let me repeat that again. At 5-4, the Baltimore Ravens sit at the bottom of that division. Cleveland's at 5-3. The Steelers are at 6-3. And the Cincinnati Bengals lead the Steelers by a half a game at 5-2-1. Very impressive there. Final game of the week, the Philadelphia Eagles travel to Houston to face the Texans. And although it is reported that Nick Foles, quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, broke his clavicle and is going to be out at least a month for the Philadelphia Eagles, Mark Sanchez, that's right, you heard me correctly, the Sanchez.
What?
That's right, mija. Mark Sanchez came out of the woodwork. There was a Mark Sanchez sighting. He actually performed all right for the Philadelphia Eagles, helped the Philadelphia Eagles get a win over the Houston Texans, 31-21 in Houston, to fend off a comeback from the Houston Texans. Now, I took Houston in this football game because I got some bad intel. I heard Clowney was coming back. I figured that Clowney and J.J. Watt were going to team up, get after the quarterback. Obviously, Clowney did not play the game. But Mark Sanchez, you know, they still got to Nick Foles. As I said, they injured him. Mark Sanchez came in, threw for over 200 yards, threw a couple touchdown passes, completed 15 of 22 passes, looked very good in his relief there of Mark Sanchez. We'll see if that continues. But Shady McCoy finally broke out of his rut. He gained 117 yards rushing on 23 carries for an average of 5.1 yards per game. The Houston Texans, I don't know what to make of them, folks. I really don't. I think that they're a, you know, they're just, they're going to suffer there in mediocrity until they figure out what they're going to do at the quarterback position. They've had opportunities. They've had opportunities to get quarterbacks, and they have just been so dash-nab stubborn that they've wanted to go defense, 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 and I love it. I love that they're playing J.J. Watt the skajillion, bajillion dollars that they're paying that guy. It is a lot of cabbage for one guy, but it's a lot of cabbage for one guy who plays defense and is not responsible for making points. You need to score points in the NFL if you're going to win games. That's it. Yes, you have to stop other teams from scoring points, but more than likely is not with the way the league is structured right now, with all of the way the penalties are set and is skewed towards the offense and defenders getting calls for pass interference, for sneezing on people. It's an offensive-minded league right now. And you don't have a quarterback on your staff who can be that guy to get you the points. It's not Fitzpatrick. You're not going to go anywhere with Ryan Fitzpatrick. You got to remember, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a guy who is a journeyman. He is a journeyman quarterback. And not being mean by calling him a journeyman quarterback, that's what he is. He spent 2 years with the Rams, 2 years with the Bengals, 4 years with the Bills, 1 year with the Tennessee Titans, and now this is 1 year with the Houston Texans. That's a journeyman quarterback. I'm not calling him something that he's not. That is what he is. Journeyman, by definition, is a man who journeys and goes from team to team. That is what he has done. And you are basing your whole season, a season where you have competent weapons on offense to go out and compete with the other teams in your division. You have given the reins of that very nice, shiny Mercedes to Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's not going to get it done. He couldn't get it done at any of the other places where he was at. What makes you think he's going to get it done for you? And that's where you are. And that's where the Houston Texans are. As much as I would like for them to be better, they're not going to be because they don't have a signal caller who is worth anything. Whew, I didn't even know I was going to get into a rant there, but I did. And I'm just tired of seeing the Houston Texans not go after a signal caller that's going to raise their team from mediocre, just above average status to elite. They have talent. They've had a lot of talent on offense. And they just wouldn't reach out and get a quarterback that was going to make that team great. And here they are, once again, sitting at 4-5, just below average, when they could be a lot better. I have nothing else to say about the Houston Texans. They lost me a game. Derek took the Eagles, mostly because that's Derek's team. right, Derek? But there you go. So basically, Derek and I are going to finish with identical records for the week. We only differed on two games, the challenge game, which I got, New Orleans over Carolina, and this game, which he got, Philadelphia over Houston. We had the same picks with all the others. We're finishing at 8-5 for the week. So not bad, but not great either. The Cowboys, the Chargers, the Niners, and the Broncos kind of all did us in. They're not very good. So those are all the games of the week. Got a hand to the Philadelphia Eagles. They found a way to get a win when their guy went down, something that the Dallas Cowboys could not do. Their main guy went down. They couldn't get a W there against Arizona. Philadelphia's guy, their guy went down. They were able to have Mark Sanchez come in and get a win against Houston. But now it looks like maybe Cowboys get Tony Romo back this week.
Philadelphia's going to be without Nick Foles for at least 4 weeks, maybe even longer. And we'll see if Mark Sanchez can keep that team afloat while Nick Foles gets better. Let's move on. Games of importance. The Indianapolis Colts travel to New York to face the New York Football Giants. That was Monday Night Football. The game just ended literally minutes ago, and it wasn't even close. It wasn't even funny. It wasn't even fair. It was ugly. Ugh with a little bit of glee. I think what happened here is people saw the New York Giants, and they were like, you know what, Giants could be big. I mean, even after they started, remember the Giants started 0-2, and they got routed by the Detroit Lions 35-14 in the opener. They lost to Arizona 25-14 in week two. And they were 0-2, and everybody was like, oh, the Giants aren't that bad. Are they really that bad? Can they be that bad? Then they beat Houston 30-17 at home. They go out on Thursday Night Football and thrash the Washington Redskins in front of, you know, primetime audience, 45-14. They beat Atlanta Falcons 30-20. Of course, now we know that the Atlanta Falcons aren't as good as we thought they were. And they got a three-game winning streak, and all of a sudden they're 3-2, and everyone's like, wow, maybe this Giants team is not that bad. Well, yeah, they are. They beat teams that were pretty awful. Houston, as we said, they're 4-5. They're pretty mediocre. The Redskins are at the bottom of their division, and Atlanta's at the bottom of their division, not doing too good. Then the following week, they get thrashed by the Philadelphia Eagles 27-0. Dallas beats them 31-21 by 10 points. They have their bye week. They come out of their bye week and get thrashed on primetime Monday Night Football 40-23. Giants aren't just good. They're not good. And they get bad news today. Prince Amukamura, their top cornerback, has sustained a bicep tear, torn bicep, and he's likely done for the year. Unfortunately, for Prince, we've had him on the show before. He's a nice guy. We like him, but that is what all the reports are coming out right now, is that he sustained a torn bicep. That usually means that you're done for the season. And so now the Giants keep getting dinged up. I mean, everyone else is getting dinged up as well. So not making excuses, but the Giants just were never as good as that 3-2 record made them look like they were just a few weeks ago. Now the New York Giants sit at 3-5, not looking good at all. 3-5 puts them tied with, well, not tied. The Redskins are actually worse. They're 3-6. So they're in third place down there, but that, you know, the Giants and the Redskins are clearly falling off the pace with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. Those teams are at 6-2 and 6-3, respectively. The Eagles with that half-game lead over Cowboys in the division. And those two, you know, teams got to face each other twice coming up here in the next several weeks. So Giants and Redskins, not going to stick a fork in them just yet, because with the Eagles and the Cowboys having quarterback trouble, who knows, those teams could, you know, slip and falter and lose a few games in a row, and the Giants and Redskins can win a few games in a row, and they'd all bunched up in the middle and mediocrity. But if the Cowboys and Eagles can get through these QB troubles over the next couple weeks, and the Cowboys getting to bye here after this week, maybe that helps them put more distance between the Giants and Redskins. Horrible, horrible game for the Giants. Once again, the Indianapolis Colts look like they're ready to compete in the division, in the AFC, 40-24. Andrew Luck shining again, 354 yards, 4 touchdown passes. The kid is, you know, once again, maybe I need to apologize to Andrew Luck time, because I wanted the Colts to say, hey, RG3 may be the guy. They decided to go with Luck. RG3 went to Washington. RG3 has been injury prone. And Andrew Luck has just continued to shine in this league. I think someone gave me his numbers earlier. Well, he is, I think, 23-12 in his first three seasons in the league or something. Something like that. It's pretty outrageous. It's pretty crazy. In 2012, and he played in all 16 games, which, first of all, that is a big thing. He has stayed healthy, and he has played in all 16 games in both his first two seasons. And so far in this season, he's played in all 8 games. He is right now 28-13 through his first 2.5 years. Just very impressive. It's very impressive. And he continues to have games where he throws for over 300 yards. You got to look at the kid and say, hey, that was great. But you know what? It's also timing. It's all the timing. Andrew Luck decides he's going to come out. He's done at Stanford. He comes out, and that's the season that the Indianapolis Colts are 2-14 and have the worst record in the league. The next year, the Kansas City Chiefs have the worst record in the league. There was no Andrew Luck-type quarterback coming out. They had to decide that, you know what, we get a left tackle. That's what we get for being the worst record in the league. That's what's kind of crazy about the draft. It's all when people come out. It's timing. And fortunately for the Indianapolis Colts, they have been bad at a time where superstar quarterbacks came out. They were bad, and they got the decision, do we want Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf? They did their due diligence, got Peyton Manning, and they got one heck of a bargain. Same thing, Andrew Luck, RG3, who are we going to take? They go with Luck, and he's been fantastic so far. I think if you look at his stats for this season alone, very impressive. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He has thrown for over 300 yards in all but one game, and that was a 30-27 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles in week 2. Other than that, he's thrown for over 312 yards or more in every single game. Just been impressive. He's been impressive. And you got to remember, they started 0-2. They lost to Denver. They lost that close one to Philly. Remember, they had that big lead, and they let it slip away. And then they didn't lose again until last week when Ben Roethlisberger decided to start his 6 touchdowns per game campaign. Those are the 3 losses that they've had. They've been pretty impressive in all the other wins. They had a 27-0 blowout of the Cincinnati Bengals. That's a team that's leading the division. They beat the Baltimore Ravens. And then the other teams that, you know, they had to play, division rival Houston, got a win there. They blew out Tennessee and Jacksonville. That's what you do with those teams. Very nice. Indianapolis Colts improving to lead their division at 6-3. The New York Giants, they fall to 3-5 and are just pretty much ready to get a fork stuck in them. Next game of importance, the St. Louis Rams travel to San Francisco. And, oh, man, do the Rams have the San Francisco 49ers number or what? I mean, it's just, it's incredible to believe that in a division that has been dominated by San Francisco or Seattle over the last couple years, that the lonely Rams, the team that has been in fourth place or at the bottom of the division, has found a way to beat these teams. I mean, just beat them. 13-10 victory. Yeah, there was a little controversy there at the end of the game. Was the catch by Crabtree in the end zone, or was it really at the one-yard line? And was there a fumble or not a fumble? Hey, you got to stand by what's called. And it looked like Kaepernick was bobbling the ball all through the snap. He dropped the ball. It was clearly on the ground. Couldn't see whether he crossed the goal line with control of the football. And it was a fumble. The Rams picked it up. They came out with the ball. They said, hey, look, we got it. And the ref says, you do. It's a touchback. Rams ball. Game over. The 49ers didn't like it. You know what? Here's what Coach Harbaugh and Kaepernick had to say at the end of that game.
Last play, I didn't have a real good view of it. They said play stands. That was the explanation.
Ball came out. I have to hold on to it. I know I crossed the line. Yeah, did bobble the snap, but regardless.
They said they would review all of it, the clock, the catch, the spot, and they came back with a play stands. That was the only explanation.
We had opportunities in both halves. We didn't take advantage.
Not enough good football. You know, we got beat.
Yeah, they got beat. You did, Coach. You got beat by a division rival. Again, a division rival that always seems to beat you every year. The Rams find a way to beat the San Francisco 49ers. I don't understand how it happens. I would say, and I think that everybody would arguably agree for the most part, that the San Francisco 49ers are the more talented team. They have more talent. I'm not sure if they have the better coach. I kind of like Fisher a lot, but Harbaugh's a great coach. Yet, over the last several seasons, the St. Louis Rams just find a way to beat San Francisco. Last year, they tied San Francisco, right? Was last year the year of the tie? That's right. So, last year they lost twice to the San Francisco 49ers. I think the first game wasn't even close. It was 35-11 beat down. And then later in December, it was a closer game. I think they lost by like 7 or 10. It was the year before that in 2012 where the Rams played the 49ers to a tie. I think it was 24-24 in week 10. And then later in the season, they actually beat San Francisco 16-13. So that was 2 years ago. Sorry, got a little confused. So 2 years ago in the 2012 season, they beat the Niners 16-13, and then they tied them 24-24. It was last year where they lost both games. But then the year before that, I think they beat San Francisco one of the games as well, maybe 27-24 or something like that. I'm not sure. But regardless, those games are close, whether they win or not. They play. There's something about the Rams and the Niners. You know, let's go back a long time. I know as a kid, I always watched the Rams and the Rams and the 49ers. It looked like the 49ers had always had the upper hand on the Rams, and so whenever the Rams would beat the Niners, they just, those games stick in my head. But recent history shows the Rams are not afraid of playing San Francisco. They will go to San Francisco, or they will play them tough in St. Louis, and they will win football games. And that's what they've done. A clear example of the Rams not being afraid of Kaepernick, not being afraid of what the 49ers are going to do. This was another game we missed. Both Derek and I had the 49ers, and we were wrong. The Rams just wanted a little bit more, and whether there was controversy or not at the end of that game, the San Francisco 49ers didn't do enough. Even Kaepernick, you heard him say, they didn't do. They had plenty of opportunities to make plays. They didn't do enough, and they didn't make enough plays to win that football game. Final, 13-10. The St. Louis Rams are pretty much, for all intents and purposes, out of it. They're 3-5. But San Francisco 4-4. The big question is now, will they make the playoffs? At 4-4, I'm not so sure if they will make the playoffs. It's going to be very difficult for them to come out of the playoffs. If you think, let's just say Arizona continues on their winning ways and they win the division. That means Seattle and San Francisco are going to be playing for a wild card. Green Bay and Detroit playing some good football right now. Philadelphia and Dallas are playing some good football. You got to look at the South, and they're only going to send the division winner. The South is that bad. The Saints are leading the division at 4-4. No one else is coming out of the South. So, literally, I would think Seattle and San Francisco are going to be playing for one wild card spot, because I think the other wild card spot is either going to come out of the East or the North, which means only one wild card spot for the West. And who's it going to be? Which is the team that is not going to make it? Right now, the odd man out would be the San Francisco 49ers. They may not be able to make it, and the Seahawks are going to be in a battle just to make the division. You know, I don't know if they win the division, but they're going to be in a battle just to make the wild card themselves. Still a lot of football to be played. A lot of football to be played. And there's going to be a lot of good football to watch for us as fans coming up over the next several weeks heading into the playoffs. I am very, very excited for what the end of this football season has. The final there, once again, 13-10 St. Louis over San Francisco. And the final game of importance, the Washington Redskins traveled to Minnesota to face the Redskins. I mean, to face the Vikings. And Teddy Bridgewater gets it over RG3. RG3 looked decent. I wouldn't say he was bad or good, but he was decent. He passed for 251 yards, had one touchdown pass. I will tell you what I saw from Robert Griffin III, RG3. I didn't see the explosiveness in his runs. If you watch that game again, I don't know if you guys have game rewind or what have you, but if you go watch that football game again, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about when I say that there was no explosiveness when RG3 decided to take off and run, which he didn't do much of, by the way, because he's now trying to be the pocket passer because he's not trusting the running with his legs. He still continues to take far too many bad shots. There was one where he kind of got bent over and his knee looked like he was going down again. But there were a couple times where the first downs were there for him to run for it. I think he ran for one. The other time he came up short twice. And he just was not there. He wasn't all there. And it pained me to watch him. Like I said, I like this kid coming out of Baylor. I hated the fact that he went to the Washington Redskins. All that being aside, I feel sorry for the kid. I don't think he's getting a fair shake, mostly because of his injuries. And I think he's coming back too fast from these injuries. I thought he came back too fast last year from the injuries. And he's not letting his body heal, because he was not the same RG3 that I saw in year one. That one run, his first season in the NFL against the Vikings, mind you, where he rushed for about, I think it was a 78-yard touchdown run against the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. He looked so lightning quick. Yesterday when I watched him against the Vikings, he seemed like a turtle. He seemed like he was destined and determined to run, and he wanted to run fast. He wanted to be the RG3 of old, but his body just couldn't do it. And that is what he's become. It's a shell of the RG3 that we saw in year one. And I don't think we're ever going to see that RG3 again. It's just not good. Threw another bad pick. He was indecisive in some throws. And the Vikings get the win, 29-26 at home. It's good for them. I think I would have sat RG3 one more week. The Washington Redskins have a bye week coming up this week. So why not sit him? Why not let Cousins or McCoy go out there? I guess it was McCoy, because McCoy is the one who got the win at Dallas. Let McCoy go out there on the road again at Minnesota. let him play. Let him see what he can do. Have the bye week. Give RG3 last week and another bye week to heal. And then you come out of the bye week, you're at home playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are awful and won one game. Then you throw him out there and see what he's got. Rushing him back too quickly, not giving him the appropriate amount of time to heal, and it's not the same RG3. And I just think, as fans, it's sad to that we don't get to see that explosiveness from the RG3 that we saw in year one. Anyways, it doesn't matter. Redskins aren't going anywhere. They're 3-6, fourth in the NFC East. I would say stick a fork in them, because with their schedule coming up, they're not going to win very many football games. All right, I got to speed this up. Games of interest, Jets at Kansas City. I laugh because the one play, if you haven't seen it, the Kansas City Chiefs won 24-10 over the Jets. Jets just don't have anything offensively. I'm sorry. It's a bad team to watch right now. But the touchdown that I'm thinking of, Kansas City's driving. They're inside the 5-yard line. Alex Smith throws a pass, tries to throw it to the outside guy. It gets deflected by a defensive end. Sitting, laying on the ground is Anthony Fasano, tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's just laying there on the ground, like at the 1-yard line. The ball that gets tipped falls right down to him. He catches it. Nobody touches him. He leaps. He rolls. He jumps into the end zone. Scores a touchdown. It's got to be the craziest touchdown I've ever seen, ever. The dude, literally, that's how bad the season is for the New York Jets. The dude, Fasano, is on his back, on the ground, on his butt. The ball gets deflected. He catches the ball while on his butt, leaps into the end zone from his butt, stretches, scores a touchdown. And so now the New York Jets have given us the butt fumble for a touchdown, and now it's the butt catch for a touchdown. Not good for the New York Jets. 24-10, the final there. The Jets, as I said, I stuck a fork in them. They are done at 1-8. They're not going anywhere, because even if they're to win out, 8-8 is not going to get you anything in the AFC. You won't even sniff a wild card in the AFC at 8-8. So the Jets are playing for next year, and I think it may be the end of the Rex Ryan era in New York. Nap games, real quickly, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Cleveland Browns. Cleveland Browns took care of business 22-17, although there was iffy there for a moment. It was iffy. Tampa Bay did have a lead late in that game, 17-16, but Cleveland was managed to salvage it. And then you watch out for the Browns. Like I said, they're not in last place anymore. They're sitting at 5-3 in position to strike just a half a game out of first place. The Jacksonville Jaguars playing the Cincinnati Bengals, the second to last nap game. Cincinnati gets the win by 10, 33-23 over the Jags. Jags fall to 1-8 as well. I officially have to stick a fork in them, because 1-8, as I said, it's not going to get it done in the AFC, but they are going to London, and I'm going to London, which I am going here in just a few hours. So I guess I got to try and sell them and be a little bit excited about the Jags. They came back in this football game. The thing about Jacksonville is they're fighting hard, and it actually scares me a little bit for the Dallas Cowboys, is that they continue to play hard football. And if the Cowboys don't come and be focused and be ready to play, Jacksonville might sneak a win from them, because they continue to play hard every time they hit the field. Final there, 33-23, Cincinnati over Jacksonville. Final nap game, the Oakland Raiders travel to Seattle to face the Seahawks. Seattle gets the win, 30-24, but Seattle's got to be careful. They were in complete control of this football game. They were winning 24-3, and they let Oakland storm back and get back into this game. They were an onside kick away from getting the football. They were only down 6, 30-24, when they got the onside kick, and literally it was just inches from them. It's going to be scary for Seattle Seahawks fans if the Seattle Seahawks don't focus these final 8 weeks of the season. Final there, 30-24. The Seattle Seahawks improve to 5-3, a couple games out of first place, chasing the Arizona Cardinals. And the Oakland Raiders as well are going to get the fork. Stick a fork in them. They are done at 0-8. I am officially, although this pains me, because there are some folks there in the Oakland Raider organization that I do like, but it pains me to say that I am now officially putting the Oakland Raiders on 0-16 watch. When you hit 0-8 and you haven't won any games, you got to get the 0-16 watch. Just real quickly, I'm going to go over their schedule for you. The Raiders have already had their bye week. So here you go. Upcoming is Denver, at San Diego, host Kansas City, loss. Go to St. Louis, that's probably going to be their chance to get out of 0-16. Then they host the 49ers, across the Bay rival. They go to Kansas City, they host the Buffalo Bills, and then they go to Denver at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. I'm going to say at St. Louis, and when they host Buffalo, that's it. Those are their two chances. I don't see them winning any of the other games, so the Oakland Raiders are officially on 0-16 watch. For everyone in the UK going to be in the London area this week for the Cowboys-Jags game, the 12th International Series game, please shoot me an email. We're going to be hosting a party at, I don't know the name of the location yet. I will put it up soon, hopefully on Wednesday when I get to London. I will have all that information. But shoot me emails if you want to come. We hang out, have a few drinks, have a few laughs, talk football. Once again, Saturday night before the big game on Sunday, shoot me an email at steven@rarn.net. Let me know if you and a guest, give me some names of the folks that are going to come out, and then I will reply back with the address of the location of the place that we are going to be having some fun. Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening wherever you are in this great world of ours, for continuing to download NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda, and I'm out.